Blog Talk Radio. Product Management Talk, a regular broadcast for passionate product professionals and business people that don't get a chance to leave their desk and participate in product talks in person, so we bring product talks to you wherever you are. Every episode, we discuss different aspects of what it takes to produce successful products. Everyone is invited, including agile practitioners, user experience designers, content and community managers, business owners, CEOs, entrepreneurs, social media strategists, innovation managers, business analysts, project managers, product managers, program managers, product marketing managers, brand managers, software developers, and you. As well as everyone involved with the entire product lifecycle process from inception to sunsetting. Follow us on Blog Talk Radio. Go to www.blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk. That's our website, www.prodmgmttalk.com. Follow us on Twitter at PRODMGMTTALK, and use the hashtag to tweet answers to the questions and follow the tweets, # PRODMGMTTALK. Thank you to our platinum sponsor, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. Visit them on the web, www.aipmm.com. The AIPMM is a worldwide certifying body of product marketing, management, and team professionals. The AIPMM promotes worldwide excellence and forwards product management professionalism with certification credentials, education, trainings, networking, and professional growth opportunities. AIPMM membership benefits include eligibility for certification, partner offerings and training discounts, productivity tools, career center, mentor matching, advanced access to new curriculums, webinar series, thought leaders, and private events. AIPMM certification credentials allow individual members to demonstrate their level of expertise and provide corporate members an assurance that their product professionals are operating. This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host for the Global Product Management Talk, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon and on the web, cindyfsolomon.com. Okay, and we're live. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Fantastic. How about you?
Awesome. So today we are talking about product marketing, torpedo product marketing, with Bill Reed of the Aventi Group, at Aventi. Bill Reed is the managing director and co-founder of Aventi Group, and he is a tech and product marketing expert. Today we'll be discussing winning strategies and directives to sink the competition. Bill is joining us from Hawaii to discuss strategy lessons from successful battles to effective product marketing techniques to identify the target goals, properly arm the sales team, utilize state-of-the-art product marketing weapons, and sink the competition to guarantee victory. Bill is a former submariner and U.S. Navy diver. He's also a New York Times bestselling author of 5 books and the creator of Vector App, which is a mobile and PC application that is revolutionizing demand generation for technology companies. Bill, how are you? And you're coming to us from Hawaii today.
I am. Beautiful island of Maui. Having a rough day.
Thanks. It's raining
Sorry
here.
About
no worries.
I heard it was raining there. My apologies.
So Bill had been on the show briefly a few weeks ago, and due to popular demand, we're having him back for the full hour. He also spoke recently at Startup Product Talks in San Francisco, and he is the expert on product marketing, which is near and dear to my heart. And I will say that I got into product management through product marketing, because in technology companies, it's been my experience that they are so technology focused that they don't understand, and product build focused on, you know, what's important is building an excellent product, but then they don't understand that regardless of how good your product is, you need to get it out to the market and you need to publicize it within the market. So I got into product management deeper and closer to the product build to get the content and messaging necessary to provide the narrative for that product in the market, and also to bring feedback from the market to the engineers. So I'm delighted to discuss in depth with you, Bill, what product marketing is, why it's important, and why it's often a missed opportunity in technology companies.
Yeah, I think that's a great segue into what I've seen over the past several decades, actually, in working with a number of blue chip firms, from some of the largest technology companies all the way down to startups. And that is that we oftentimes look at our technology and we think that, you know, if we build it, they will come, regardless of what it is. And we get a little bit caught up in technology features and capabilities and so forth. And we oftentimes don't take into account that we have an audience that we have to build our solutions for. And at the end of the day, someone has to exchange dollars for whatever it is that we are building. And in order for them to give us dollars, the value of what we are giving them has to be higher than the perceived amount or value that they are giving back to us in dollars. And I think that's the key thing we'll want to target today in our talk.
So the key thing is the value and generating revenue for that product. And certainly not some, you know, in startups are very close to the market. They're iterating constantly and getting feedback from the market. And certainly that's much easier to do with web products, applications, things with very short build cycles in an agile environment. But how is that done with more traditional products, with hardware, with things with longer lead times and longer development cycles?
Yeah, I think what's been curious for me is when I was writing my Red November book a couple of books ago, which was really a book about Cold War submarine operations. And, you know, you would scratch your head and say, well, how does that relate at all to product marketing? And what I discovered was that there were a lot of parallels between some of the things that I saw worked in that environment and some of the things that I saw did not work well. And that's where I decided that these parallels were quite interesting to explore in terms of how do we properly target our customers, sync the competition, as you'd mentioned earlier. And then a real challenge is navigating channels, building solutions that would be suitable for channels. And raising the value comes from understanding the sales process, understanding what salespeople do at the end of the day in order to actually sell a product. And what came to mind was in being a Navy diver, I had the privilege of working several cases on missions with Navy SEALs. And what I discovered is that they use a technique they called, essentially when they were planning, do a brief back. And basically what that is they start from the end goal and they do a complete plan, a brief back plan about how they're going to accomplish that goal going backwards, right? So their end goal is here. you know, what's the step right before the end goal, and so on, all the way back. And using those kinds of techniques when we start our product marketing planning, even in things like our marketing requirements documents and product requirements documents, can have a dramatic effect on how well we can prepare for and build our solutions that will be suitable for the market we're going after.
And that just makes common sense. It just seems so obvious to me. In target marketing, that's what you do. You go first and see where's the bullseye that you want to hit, and then work backwards to figure out how are you going to hit that. But it's not so obvious for to people who are not immersed in marketing, and that's just not their orientation. So I do want to step back because you mentioned some excellent concepts that, again, are not obvious to everyone. Could you discuss what channels are?
Absolutely. So channels, in the technology sense of the word, are the resellers. You know, we call some companies call them partners, or they may call them LARs or VARs, value-added resellers. There's lots of different terms for them, but they're essentially the organizations that resell our solutions. Now, most often companies use a two-tier model, which is they'll sell to a distributor, and the distributor will then sell to a reseller. The reseller will then sell to the end user of the solution. Some companies do sell direct. Quite often when that's the case, they'll also have channels, in which case they have to manage the potential channel conflict where they're selling direct and the channel partner wants to sell to that same customer. That can be a difficult challenge, but it can be managed. Generally, when we sell through channels, we have to enable and support those channel partners, and we now have thousands, most likely, salespeople, channel salespeople, and they have hundreds or thousands of products that they have to sell, and we can't make the assumption that, you know, our stuff is so great that they're going to drop everything else they're doing, all the other products they have, and they're going to focus exclusively on our solution, and they're going to read all the manuals we give them and look at every PowerPoint and every brochure, and they're going to be seasoned professionals on our solution as good as the direct sales folks. So therefore, we again, thinking backwards, using that brief back methodology, how do we empower them? That's part of what product marketing is about. So that they have solutions that very quickly they can sell to their companies that they're working with and be able to articulate our value propositions very quickly.
So in a software world, would channels be the web versus a mobile device versus a tablet? Would these be considered distribution channels?
They would be considered the ways that we would reach customers, so they are potentially channels to the customer. You could say that if I wanted to sell directly, that I might have an e-store that would be on the web or via mobile devices, that kind of thing, and I would sell directly, in which case I wouldn't have a reseller. Or I would sell to a reseller who would use those. They would set up e-stores, or they would have abilities for customers to go up and buy right off the web. You know, the CDW, for example, would be an example of that. They can sell over the phone. They do have salespeople that go directly into accounts, but oftentimes they'll sell product over the web. People go up and click on a link, and they'll go find your products, and they'll buy it.
So what is the acronym CDW?
CDW, that's the name of a reseller. It's basically like a Staples.com or something, but for technology solutions.
Got it. So, because we have so many people listening, we're a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio. I want to make sure that people who
aren't familiar with product management are understanding, are staying in the conversation with us. So also, in terms of hardware, it's understandable that the manufacturer who's building the product would also not be the distributor, but they would be the source of all the information around the product. And that's how software used to be sold. And I guess, so enterprise software is still sold that way. The manufacturer is not also selling it. They're enabling people to sell it. But also from any product marketing function within an organization, who is selling the product for them is a sales team.
That's correct. So, and I think that's, again, the key that we have to think about is it starts from the end, right? So, again, taking that brief back methodology or mentality, let's first think about what happens at the end of the day. What is the goal that we want to accomplish? And that is that somebody buys something that we have manufactured or we've created in some respect. Now, that's going to happen via a salesperson or a, as we mentioned earlier, a web-based sale, but again, a communication vehicle built by a person. So let's think in terms of what a salesperson does when they actually sell a product. Most salespeople have been trained, professional salespeople have been trained using some kind of methodology. One of the most popular is Huthwaite's Spin Selling, books written by Neil Rackham even back in the late 80s. About half the Fortune 500 use that. And then there's Miller Hyman, very popular. Sandler is another popular one. But most salespeople use these processes. And so we need to think in terms of how they sell. And in almost every case, for a consultative type sale, which most technology products are, meaning that we have to consult with the customer, impart some information to get them to buy, they use questions. They are asking the customer lots of questions about what's going on, what's their infrastructure look like, what are they trying to accomplish, what are the problems and challenges, what are the implications of not solving those problems, and then what is it that they really need? And so we need to think in terms of how our product can fit into that process. How do we create questions that our salespeople at the end of the day can actually use to sell the product?
So how would we know what questions would be appropriate for the salespeople to ask when they're going into so many varied types of environments? I mean, definitely in order to build the product, we're assuming that we're solving problems, we're tapping into the pain of the customer, but how do those translate into questions for the salespeople to ask?
Yeah, great question. Eventi Group uses a process we call the six C's, but it's basically modeled after or around or compatible with these sales processes. So what we do is we spend time really trying to understand the solutions that have been created by our clients and how they would then translate into messages, if you will, or messaging that could be used in the field by salespeople to actually sell the solution. Now, most of the time, we marketers want to message using what we call a push methodology. We love our stuff. We created it. We love it. So we want the world to love it, and everybody should love it. So we push. We say, our product does this, and it's so fantastic this way, and our company's been around a zillion years, and, all these things about us. It's all about us. We're pushing and pushing, and we're imparting all kinds of advantages and so forth that we think are benefits, rather than pulling. Salespeople pull. They use questions. So that's what we want to discover. We're going to take some time to say, okay, what kind of questions would a salesperson ask if they were sitting in front of a customer trying to sell our solution? they would start by asking some questions around, hey, what's your infrastructure look like? You know, how many servers do you have? If that's, you know, you're selling software or whatever, you know, what kind of storage do you have? You know, how big, how small, how tall? And then move into more problem type questions. You know, where does it hurt? You know, what are kind of the issues you're having? And then they get into implications. Hey, what happens if you don't fix this? Is it a $5 problem or a $5 million problem if you don't solve this issue? And then they go into what we call need payoff type questions. This comes from spin selling. Well, if we were able to do the following, you know, would that solve this problem for you? Right. So if we start thinking in that respect and we start mapping out our messaging and our questions, we can bring that all the way back to our solution, even back as far as building a solution that would be appropriate for that customer.
So what did you call the question where you're, where the salespeople is determining, is this a $5 problem or a $5 million problem?
So consequences or implications. And that's a real important step. It's actually, in my opinion, one of the most important that salespeople do. Professional salespeople know that it's not good enough just to have a problem we can solve. And marketers need to understand that too. Oftentimes I see a brochure, for example. We start off with a question, or maybe we start off with a statement that says, you know, here's a problem, kind of a nebulous problem that, you know, companies are dealing with. Or they use a, you know, research company quote from Gartner or IDC, and they say, you know, 47% of companies out there are struggling with these kinds of problems. Okay, that's one sentence. And then 200 sentences about how they can solve that tiny little nebulous problem. That's not how salespeople sell. Right, so we want to spend, let's take a brochure, for example, paragraph one. You know, here are kind of the scenarios or the situations that companies are involved in that we are interested in selling to, right? So we're only going to talk about those companies that fit our sweet spot. Then the next paragraph, well, here are some of the problems that these kinds of companies are having. Next paragraph, here's what can happen if you, Mr. Customer, don't solve these problems. And have you thought about this? Is this, you know, we're asking questions here of the customer, right in the sentences. Is this something that would cause some real severe issues? You know, if you weren't able to solve this security issue in your company, would it be a $6 million problem like Poneman Research says it would be? Right? Then you go into the need payoff stuff, which is, hey, what if you could solve this problem and avoid that $6 million heartache?
So the product marketing people are identifying that sweet spot in order to direct the salespeople towards it.
That's correct. So we want to help profile exactly who we're selling to, and that brings us into personas. Right? So personas are, who are we selling to? What's our sweet spot? Now, the key that we don't want to do is to not boil the ocean, right? It is tempting to say, hey, there isn't a single company out there that shouldn't want to buy our product. Well, that might be true, but we don't have unlimited resources and we don't have unlimited time. So we need to narrow our focus very tightly. We may want to take all of France and Germany, but right now let's just concentrate on one beach. Let's secure that beachhead first, and then we can move forward, right? So what is that beachhead that we want to go secure? Think of it in terms of a target. It has that red spot in the middle, and then you have another concentric circle outside and another one outside of that. That doesn't mean we won't sell to those outside rings, but we're going to focus our initial energies on that red spot in the middle. And that is, you know, financial services and oil and gas companies and technology companies, that's our main focus because they'll resonate the best with our solution. We're looking for infrastructures that have, you know, 50% or better virtualization. And I'm making stuff up here. And, you know, they need to have more than 100 servers. Yeah, we'll sell to somebody who has 50 servers, but our sweet spot is 100 and up, you know, on and on. right? And they need to have the following five or six key problems, because that's what we really solve. But more importantly, the implications of not solving those problems are the following, right? They may have a particular problem, but if it's not a large enough problem, then the value of our product isn't high enough to offset, because, you know, it's $250,000 for our product, and so if they don't have $1 million problem and up, we're not going to offset that. You know, if they're a $50,000 problem, they're not going to buy our $250,000 solution to offset it. So that's our persona. And we even go as far as saying, you know, there's three roles: decision maker, an influencer, and a complainer, if you will, a person with all the problems. And this is who we're going to target.
So those three roles are the, on the buyer side, the type of people that the salespeople would be interacting with in the sales process?
Yes, that's correct. So again, we're still thinking backwards from our objective. Our objective is to sell a product to whom, right? We want to sell a product to this kind of a company or these kinds of companies. And within those companies, we have to understand that there's usually at least three roles, if not more, but three primary roles. There's usually a decision maker. Now, this is the person that's going to make the final decision. Most often they are the C-level, you know, CIO, CFO, or some combination of the two, or a VP of internet technology, or maybe it's a VP of security, depending upon what our solution is. Could be a VP of marketing if we're selling into the marketing organization, that kind of role. But it's not always a title. Decision makers can be an architect, but they happen to be the decision maker for that particular solution. Then we have what we call complainers. Now, these are the ones who have, you know, all of the responsibility resting on their shoulders. They're usually the implementers or the deployers of our technology, and they're the ones with most of the problems. So we're going to focus mostly on problems with those folks, partly strategic, partly tactical. And then we have the influencers. Professional salespeople never make the mistake of thinking they're going to sell anything to an influencer. But marketers often make the mistake of thinking that they don't want an influencer, right? If they see an influencer come through as a lead, that's not a good lead. Salespeople know that's not true. So we want to capture influencers, but the messages we say to an influencer aren't, you know, here's what you could do if you bought our product, right? Here's what it could do for your company. That's not the right message to an influencer. The right message to them is, hey, how do we get to your decision maker? How do we get to a complainer? How can you help your company by helping us get into your organization? And we want to pull information out of them. You know, what's going on in your company? Have you had an acquisition lately? You know, they're the folks you ask more of those situational type questions around. So those are the personas you want to target.
Excellent. And, you know, I don't know that as product marketers, we recognize that we need to create different messaging for each of these personas, because these types of personas would be specifically for salespeople, and not certainly they're not the type of personas that I'm thinking of when I'm developing marketing messaging. I'm thinking of who is the end user, and so this is a huge gap that you're identifying. That if I'm only thinking of the end user, that's not helping sales at all.
That's correct. And what's interesting is that the CSO organization, which is Chief Sales Officer organization, they're a research and a sales organization made up of a lot of top sales professionals. They did a study a number of years back, and they asked marketers, you know, hey, what percentage of the leads that you're giving to sales would you consider are, you know, top quality, world class? And marketers said, oh, gosh, 60-something percent. of the leads we deliver, about 65%, are top quality, world class. And they asked the sales people that same question. And Cindy, what do you think the answer was?
Probably not as high. Yeah, because
one
I know
point,
for a fact. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
not even on the scale.
Yeah, 1.3%.
Wow.
Right, so sales, big disconnect, right? So salespeople are thinking, hey, the leads I'm getting are garbage. And there's a disconnect there, right? So marketing often thinks in terms of quantity. Hey, I delivered 100 leads to you. What's the problem? And sales is thinking, well, they're crap. Right? Only one of them was any good. Right? So they're more interested in quality versus quantity. And the way we deliver quality to salespeople is by understanding how to properly qualify those prospects. Right? So one of the things that Venti Group did for Adobe was we took this process, this vector methodology, and we did our six C's. You know, we understood who we were going to target as terms of a company and so forth, and asked all the questions. We identified who our personas were, those three personas, and then we created actual sales questions that we used on an online survey. All right, so as customers would visit the Adobe, in fact, they do that today. They go visit the Adobe website, and we give them some kind of an incentive, and it's usually, you know, some kind of really nice informational piece. You can't, not an ordinary white paper, but you know, a guide of some kind or a really nice e-book. We write some really great e-books that have lots of information you can't get in an ordinary white paper. But we need you, Mr. Customer, to just spend a couple of minutes going through this survey so that we can get you the right information. And we take another step. We actually customize the information. We can customize it on the fly. It's a proprietary technique that the Venti Group has. Based on those responses, we'll customize the information. But the key is capturing that information, right? We want them to give us more information. All those questions that a salesperson would ask, right? So we ask about, 8 or 10 questions. Just takes a couple of minutes. And now we have a fully qualified prospect. And we use what we call a BANT formula, budget, authority, need, and timing. That's what salespeople use. And we're asking those questions. So now we can deliver really top quality leads to salespeople based on those questions. And we know that they're qualified based on our personas and based on our targets that we set up earlier. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. As you were talking, I was thinking that there's a new discussion called agile marketing. And I've seen a lot of research and the disconnect between sales and marketing. And you nailed it. Here's where the disconnect is. I'm not so sure it's as much of a operations issue as it is right here, what you're nailing, the BANT formula. Could you talk about that BANT formula? I'm not a salesperson, so this is the first time I'm hearing this.
Absolutely. So this is a formula that salespeople use to ensure they have a qualified prospect, especially if they're thinking about visiting that prospect in person, because, or even on the phone. I mean, a salesperson today, a good top quality salesperson, is not inexpensive. Their time is very, very valuable, and they have precious little time because they're so swamped, as we all are. But they use a formula to ensure that their customer is properly qualified. The first thing is budget. And by budget, we don't want to make the mistake of asking a customer, hey, do you have a budget for our solution? Well, they don't even know what our solution is. So how are they going to have a budget? But basically what we want to understand is, you know, is the company not bankrupt, right? Are they growing at a reasonable rate? Their financials look okay, because And do they have some reasonable amount of money that they spend per year on our area of solutions, which might be, you know, their IT budgets and so forth? We just want to understand that, because if even if they don't have a budget for our stuff, if we have a high enough value, most companies can find a budget, as long as they're not bankrupt. Okay, then authority. By authority, doesn't necessarily mean, you know, this is the CIO. Everybody thinks the only person who has authority to buy is a CIO, and that's not true. You could have a manager who has authority to move that project forward, right? They have the authority right now to either block you or bring you in. And the way it typically works is that they're going to narrow down most often to around three solutions. We want to get in early enough that we are one of those three solutions, right? And that's usually at a lower level. Manager, director level is doing that before we get to a final decision maker. So authority and then need. Well, that's where we got into those questions earlier, right? What's your problems? You know, what kind of implications if you don't solve those problems? Is the need high enough? We have a $100,000 product. They better have a $100,000 need or better. And that's what we want to identify with the end there, the need, and then timing, right? Is it within the next 3 to 6 months, or is it a year from now? Now, if it's a year from now, we're not going to write that customer off. We're simply going to put them into a queue, and we're going to talk to them again in 6 or 9 months. If it's 3 to 6 months, we're going to move on them right now. It's just where the salesperson prioritizes their time and what they're going to do today.
Great. Great. Those are key. So the messaging, so product marketing has to recognize these distinctions and create the right types of messaging and questions to identify these. And these might be easily automized through a website survey or through even watching how the customer might navigate on the website into what information they're looking for. So are you suggesting that what you built for Adobe actually qualifies according to these four things?
Yes, that's correct. And so we've done that. You can do it on web. You mentioned earlier Vector App. That's another way that we've done that. We did this for Hewlett-Packard, where we built a mobile application that works on an iPad or iPhone, Android, and an end-user customer can drag and drop these little circles, small circles onto the big circles. It's all animated. And we ask those same kinds of questions, basically using that BANT formula. You know, what's your authority, need, timing, that kind of thing. But we go one step further. We actually ask them some questions around their personality types and their reading preferences, because we want to customize the content we give them. That's another big mantra today for marketers, is we want to customize content. A decision maker in a financial services firm should get different content than an administrator in an oil and gas firm, for example. So we want to make sure we understand that. And also personality types. Someone who's a very strong, controlling personality, the last thing we want to say to that person is, hey, we can automate your data center and take over all the control, right? You're out the door. That's exactly what they don't want. So you just have to be – and top salespeople understand that. So, again, as marketers, we want to empower our salespeople to sell. So that's our number one mission, empower salespeople to sell, right? That's the most important thing we can do. It's not about winning Clio Awards. It's not about the quantity of leads that we get or how many hits we got on the web or, you know, how many articles were posted. You know, all those kinds of things are nice. At the end of the day, how much revenue did we drive because we empowered salespeople, gave them the tools they need in order to sell?
Excellent. Gosh, personality types. How do you delve into that? Or will that take us off topic?
not off topic per se. I think it is important to understand the different personality types we're selling to. You know, a lot of companies today are hiring people and building teams and so forth using sophisticated psychological profiling techniques. There's lots of different ones out. We've selected the top three and did our own mashup, if you will. That's specific to what we do, but that can help us. If we understand, okay, here's our persona, here's our target market, what's the typical personality types that we deal with? You know, for a decision maker, you know, they're usually more of a strong controlling type personality or a very success-oriented, motivated type personality, and so on. So just understanding that can help us with our messaging.
Excellent. So you talked to... also about messaging, and I see an emerging perhaps profession of content marketing strategist, and that's what their focus is, not only on taking the content that is available within the organization, but targeting it appropriately. Is that what you're referencing? Do you see content marketing as a subset of product marketing?
It is to a certain extent. You know, in most companies, product marketing should span the disciplines of, you know, what it is that product management will go build, right? So creating the marketing requirement documents. Typically not so much the product requirement documents, although feeding into that. So working closely with product management to help them create the product requirement documents, but the marketing requirement documents. And that discipline should start with what we just talked about. You know, who are we selling to? Why are we selling to them? You know, where do they fit into that sweet spot, red part of the target? What are the personas, right, and what are their needs and aspirations and issues and implications and all those things we talked about. So therefore, what is it that we should build for them, that we can build, right? So there's a balance there between here's what the capabilities of our company and our solutions are, right? Here's what we're capable of building. And what we do for a living, and here's what customers are really in need of and are asking for, and what it is that we should build, and then you make a trade-off, right? You're never going to get to 100% of all the things that a customer wants. If you get to 80-20, you're doing great. So you take that 80 and you build it into your marketing requirements document. That's what helps feed your product requirement document, so product management can go build the right thing. But then you put on your content marketing hat, right? And you say, okay, now that we are going to go build that, how do I create the content that allows my salespeople, my sales teams, to sell it, right? So we always have to keep in mind that everything we're doing from a content perspective is to empower salespeople to sell.
Excellent. So in B2C, this function I think would fall under brand management. Does that sync with everything that you're seeing? Because the brand is what they're selling, basically.
Yes, absolutely. Now, what you have is a couple of things there. So on B2C, sometimes we are a little more intrinsic or commodity. Now, what do we mean by that? Well, if it's something that can be sold by a single touch to the customer, in other words, they can make a decision, say, online, on the web, and they don't need to have a consultative sale. In other words, there's not going to be two or three or six or eight people involved in the decision. It's not going to take months. We don't have to spend a bunch of time consultatively selling to into an organization. If a transaction can be done in one sitting or maybe two sittings, you know, the person is doing a little research and they can buy it on the web, then it's a little more intrinsic. Now, in that case, we can have our messaging be a little more push, right? We're pushing a little bit more. Still want to pull a little bit, but we can push a bit more. And that's where we get off a bit, because we think that technique will work across everything, but it won't. Once we start moving away from this single transaction, you know, very quick decision, more of intrinsic commodity buy, and become more consultative, we have to pull a lot more. And we have to create collateral and create content that pulls and asks questions and qualifies and empowers consultative salespeople.
Excellent. That's a very good distinction, because I think it's lost from people who are not working directly with sales teams. They think that marketing is all the same, that there's not this distinction between the type of marketing that's necessary. So do you think it's important for product marketing professionals to be trained in sales methodologies?
Oh, absolutely. And a couple of great books that you can consider. I would look to Neil Rackham. He wrote Spin Selling and also Major Account Sales. So if your products are being sold into a little bit larger firms, and by larger I mean small to medium enterprises, could be that as well, but you know, a little bit higher priced ticket, you know, up into the tens of thousands or so, Major Account Sales would be a great book to read so that you understand how salespeople think. And then, of course, next year when my book Torpedo Marketing comes out, that would be another good one. Just a shameless plug there. But in any case, those kinds of sales methodology books are excellent. And then I would recommend that salespeople actually take a two-day course. It's put on by Huthwaite, and it's a spin selling. It's called Spin Selling. Huthwaite, Huthwaite, puts this on, and it's not very expensive. It's, I think, around $1,500 or something like that. Well worth the investment. Even if you've never sold anything in your life or never plan to, it will give you the foundation of understanding how salespeople sell and arm you with that knowledge that can be invaluable in understanding how to empower salespeople with the content you're creating.
Excellent, because I have seen several times, specifically within product management software, that the product may have been excellent, but it was sold to the wrong people, or there were assumptions made that because this software solved the problems that it was built to solve, that it would automatically sell without recognizing who was buying before the end user got to it, that it wasn't sold to the purchaser. Not only that, but the purchaser is not the end user. The purchaser won't be using it. So the messaging has to speak into what the purchasers, what their job is to identify the appropriate software. And so I do see this in marketing software, by the way, that they're not clear who they are selling to.
Yes, I see that that quite often. And you know, again, there are a lot of good attempts in terms of, you know, hey, we, you know, how do we message differently to, you know, C-level messaging, right? Or how do we, you know, message to just the IT professional? And those are good things. There's nothing wrong with that. Those are good steps in the right direction. But helping to, again, empower salespeople by understanding how they view customers you know, what's the sale-centric view of a customer and how do we align better with that so that we're not creating stuff that is totally out of alignment with the way salespeople are taught to sell, right? And using the same, for the most part, terminology that they use can also help. And I mentioned those three: decision maker, influencer, you know, many of them call them complainers. You could use a different term, deployer, if you want to, you know, maybe look into what seems to be the most prevalent terminology the sales team is using and use those terminologies are better. But really understanding who they're selling to, and I think you made a good point there. A lot of times the person making the final decision we're actually selling to is not the user of the solution, right? We may have a decision maker who's a CIO. He's the final decision maker, he or she. And they're more interested in strategic. You know, what's my return on investment and my total cost of ownership? And, you know, how is this going to empower me to, you know, gain more market share? You know, those kinds of strategic things. Whereas the person deploying it, the complainer, deployer, whoever it might be, they're more interested in, hey, how does this, you know, lower my backup window, you know, or, you know, improve my efficiencies, or, you know, allow my users to have faster response rates, or whatever it might be that we're selling. How does it solve that problem? Or how does it, you know, allow me to get to the golf course faster? Right? That might be their motivation. So we have to understand what that is.
So how would product marketers understand the sales perspective? Are you suggesting that they should stand over the salespeople's shoulder or quietly observe salespeople in their natural habitat?
Yes. In fact, what we do at Aventi Group is we interview those salespeople, and we oftentimes try to shadow them if we have time to do that. You know, listen in. Maybe they're going to take a sales call, a couple sales calls, and we, you know, we're in the background just listening in and taking notes so we understand how they go through their sales process, who they are selling to. We look at, you know, examine the case studies of the success stories and so forth that they've had, and we try to contact many of those customers and talk to them directly and say, hey, why was it that you bought? What was it that really motivated you? What were the big problems that got solved? You know, we ask those same questions. What are the implications of you not solving that problem? What motivated you and pushed you over the edge? So we want to understand all those things and build that into the methodologies and processes that we build. So marketers should do the same. Really, you know, shoulder to shoulder with the sales team, understand what they're going through out there and who they're trying to sell to and how they sell it.
Yes, and I think that's what product marketing is trying to arrive at when we're looking at voice of the customer. And I would add that the non-customers are also important to listen to because they're solving their problem in some way. It may be with a competitor product or with no product. And those are still solutions, albeit not effective ones, you would hope.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, just really understanding what it is that we're trying to accomplish at the end of the day, you know, again, back to that brief back methodology, you know, what is the goal? What are we trying to get to? How do we accomplish that goal? And start from the end goal and work backward rather than the other way around. Quite often I see that, and especially in technology companies. I mentioned this in our talk the other night, that several different studies out there, slightly different numbers between the studies, but for the most part, generally, if we're product or technology oriented, in other words, you know, we build it and are convinced they're going to come, 1 out of 5 products succeed. 1 out of 5. Whereas if we're marketing-oriented, in other words, we go talk to customers, truly understand what they're trying to solve, truly understand those features and benefits that we need to build into our solution, create our MRDs around that, for the most part, 4 out of 5 solutions succeed. Big differential there, so you'll want to pay attention to that.
Excellent. I want to finish getting that tweet out. Only 1 out of 5 products succeed in tech-focused companies. 4 out of 5 products succeed in marketing-focused companies. So it is up to product marketers and I would say even product management to understand that they need to empower the sales force or the product doesn't get sold and that's where the revenue is generated. So
right.
Thank you so much, Bill, for going into depth on these issues, which is from the beginning of my career in technology. I noticed the disconnect, and I do know that product managers don't often embrace the salespeople and recognize that we need to work with them because they're often selling things that we may not be able to deliver, or they're looking at customers that are unique as opposed to representative of the sweet spot. So these are very important distinctions. Thank you, Bill, for joining us today on the Global Product Management Talk. Thank you to the AIPMM for sponsoring us. Also to Atlassian Software, which is sponsoring our broadcast. We have been broadcasting live from studio132.com. Thank you to BZ Lewis for helping us to improve our audio quality weekly. We appreciate your feedback. Join us next week for another great Global Product Management Talk. View our tweets at prodmanagementtalk.com. The Twitter transcript will be posted on SlideShare at slideshare.com/CFSolomon. And join the AIPMM for upcoming webinars, the weekly AIPMM webinar series. You can find it at AIPMM.com. Subscribe to the newsletter, AIPMM.com/subscribe. Thank you, Bill. Enjoy Maui, please, in the beautiful weather there. And we look forward to your upcoming webinar on the AIPMM series.
I look forward to it as well. And again, thanks for having me on this morning. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Have a great week.
All righty. Bye-bye now.
Bye. It should be... Thank you to our platinum sponsor, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. Visit them on the web, www.aipmm.com. The AIPMM is a worldwide certifying body of product marketing, management, and team professionals. The AIPMM. Thank you to our broadcast sponsor, Atlassian. Software is transforming the world. Atlassian is helping transform the teams building it. Atlassian helps innovators everywhere plan, build, and launch great software. Find out why more than 21,000 companies of all sizes use Atlassian issue tracking, collaboration, and software development products to work faster and smarter together. Visit Atlassian.com, Atlassian.com. Join us in person for lively discussions and great networking with product professionals at Startup Product Talks San Francisco Monthly. Go to sfproducttalks.com to find out more. As a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network, we receive 10,000 listens per week.
Imagine your brand engaged with our audience for over 50 minutes on their personal devices. Sponsor us. Email sponsor@prodmgmttalk.com for more information. Our intro theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com and the great Mark Blasco. We are broadcasting live from Studio 132.com.